Lately, I've been using a new product that I really like. It's called Superbeads. It's based on Nobel Prize winning research and the nitric oxide principle. Nitrates are converted to nitric oxide in the body, which is the secret to Superbeads activity. Call 800-738-2198 or go to intelligentbeads.com. That's 800-738-2198, intelligentbeads.com. Welcome to the Intelligent Medicine Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and once again, it is time for what for many of you is your favorite edition of the Intelligent Medicine Podcasts, which is our weekly Q&A with Layla, wherein you get to pose your questions, and you just never know what may come up, something that may be relevant to your concerns or to that of a loved one. You can email us your questions to radioprogram@aol.com, and we will endeavor to answer as many questions as we can. So welcome once again, Layla. How are you doing?
Okay. How are you, Dr. Hoffman?
Good. So let's see. What's big in the news this week? There was actually a little bit of a negative article. You know, I hate when we have to do damage control, but a negative article on fish oil in the New York Times stating that fish oil studies aren't all that good and not suggesting that fish oil may be of limited benefit for cardiovascular disease. Mm. And my comment on that is that if you cherry pick data and you look at studies that look at just one gram of fish oil per day, you may find some studies where it doesn't make much difference.
Right, whether
you take fish oil or not.
Yeah.
But I will say this, that a recent study showed that there was a major reduction in damage to the heart in people who took 6 grams. That would be, you know, very potent fish oil, you know, 6 or 8 capsules a day. For 6 months after a heart attack, there was a decreased subsequent damage. And then the Times comes around and says, well, you know, here's the new news on that. Fish oil, don't bother. You know, so much evidence that fish oil is beneficial for the heart. I think the majority of cardiologists take fish oil. Fish oil lowers triglycerides, which is important for cardiovascular prevention. It makes platelets less sticky. You know, by the way, the other thing they said in that article is that, it might be dangerous to take with blood thinners. Most studies suggest that it's not dangerous to take with blood thinners because, believe you me, anybody's had a heart attack, they're on blood thinners.
Yeah.
They did not find any complications in those people taking Plavix or aspirin or both after a heart attack, even taking 6 grams of fish oil a day. So the Times is about, usually about 20, 25 years behind the time. Set your clock, you know, it's like the, you know, time change. Set it 25 years back.
Oh, my.
And you will have the New York Times.
Okay. I'll be in my mid-20s again. That's cool.
That's good. Yeah. you'll be in a rock band and you'll be in the 20s playing your lead guitar.
No idea that I'd be doing this next. Okay.
Right.
Well, you know, the problem with most scientific research, as you know, is they're never using the amount that would be therapeutic, a therapeutic dose,
right,
to gain any benefit. So,
I once coined a phrase that it'd be great if God created every substance known to man so that it could work perfectly by taking one pill twice daily.
Yeah,
that would be great, and we can do that with pharmaceutical drugs because they're extremely powerful. So one pill may be just a very, very tiny fraction of the active medication. But in terms of natural substances, it may be that in order to get the best anti-inflammatory effect, for example, you have to take, instead of one curcumin twice a day, you may need to take 4 or 6.
Right.
Or
right.
For best immunity, you might need to take 4 or 6 Empowers a day for cancer or something like that, along those lines. So, good news also this week, a clinical study, where they actually looked at men with prostate cancer. They gave them vitamin D. I forget the dose. I didn't look at the study carefully enough, but it actually slowed the progression, decreased the likelihood of progression of prostate cancer.
Fantastic.
So, look, I'm open to any studies that suggest that, you know, one or another supplement isn't what we thought it was, but these blanket articles which refute years and years of research and hundreds of studies in a paragraph or two in the Times are really selling nutrition short.
honestly. They have blinders on. That's unfortunate.
It's
for
a problem.
Public's health, yeah.
It's a problem. So, what are our questions this week? What kind of questions
are we getting? Let's see. We have a question from Alan, Dr. Hoffman, and Layla. In a recent article on the Mind Body Green website, entitled 9 Ways to Improve Brain Health for Better Memory, it stated, get rid of casein, which is a dairy protein contained in dairy and yogurt. I eat yogurt almost every day, adding it to my morning smoothie. Is casein in yogurt bad for brain health? I don't currently have any memory problems. What do you think?
Well, I like Mind Body Green, and I've written several articles for them. And I have to say that the quality of the articles in Mind Body Green is sometimes variable. It's not exactly like the Mind Body Green Journal of Medicine.
Mm-hmm.
Not that medical journals are always perfect, but you know, it's pretty much people making sometimes assertions that are not strongly documented. You know, we know that there's the Grain Brain book by Perlmutter, Dr. David Perlmutter, who's been a frequent guest on my program, where there is some evidence that certain brain disorders may be triggered by gluten. Is there a lot of evidence that casein is neurodegenerative? I haven't really come across that. Maybe for certain people it might be a problem.
Well, gluten contains exorphins, which behave like our endogenous endorphins, giving us a kind of high. Casein does the same thing. Dairy has separate exorphins.
It's thought to be neuroexcitatory. Is that along the Russell Blaylock theory, like MSG and NutraSweet and so on?
That or hitting our opioid circuitry more than anything. So maybe a little more morphine-like. But
well, that needs to be studied. I mean, we have to see, are there any people who are centenarians with perfectly good brain health who are avid cheese consumers, where there's lots of casein.
Right.
Probably, the magnitude of that effect is not great, in my opinion.
Probably. I would say a junky diet is worse.
Hope the other 8 suggestions were better than that one.
Anyway, thank you for your question, Alan. Keep eating your yogurt as long as it's organic.
Yeah, and but, remember when yogurt was first introduced in this country? The way that it was introduced is Americans don't like the flavor of yogurt. It's kind of sour. But they made it a health food because they showed these, ancient Bulgarians or something.
Or Georgians.
Georgians or something.
They live.
And they were, it was kind of a joke. It was like, Ivan. And it turns out he's like the grandson. He's like a gray-haired guy. Then there was meet his father. And it was like, okay, that's, whatever his name is. And then they said meet
Ivan the second,
right? And meet the grandfather,
Ivan the first.
And they're all eating yogurt, I don't know. I don't know about that.
Yeah. Well, the probiotics are the champion of yogurt or fermented dairy products. So
yeah, a lot of health benefits. And different stroke for different folks. We also have a study recently, and you wrote an article on it, a very nice article showing that high intake of milk actually increased mortality among women, increased the risk of death. But when they looked at yogurt, it didn't apply to yogurt.
It didn't.
It wasn't about yogurt.
It did not apply to fermented dairy products at all. Right. Yogurt, kefir, those.
So there you go.
Okay. Our next question comes from Charlie about diabetes. Is metformin okay to take with CM-Core?
That's a great question, and why would one ask that question? The reason is because CM-Core actually acts in some ways like metformin to increase insulin sensitivity, reducing insulin resistance, thus helping to lower hemoglobin A1C, with a measure of blood sugar, preventing type 2 diabetes, ultimately helping with weight loss, cardiovascular disease, and the answer is I actually do that. I do that sometimes in people. I'll sometimes try CM-Core. When that's not enough, I'll add metformin, which I think is actually a pretty reasonable drug.
Yeah.
That may sound like an oxymoron because people, are very suspicious and worried about the side effects of drugs. But one of the beneficial effects of metformin is that it may actually prevent certain cancers like colon cancer and prostate cancer and perhaps others, even lung cancer. So why does it do that? It seems, the blood sugar has something to do with cancer. So by reducing insulin resistance,
yes,
you may reduce insulin-like growth factor, which might be a cancer promoter.
Mm-hmm.
All right, so why can they be combined? Well, it's not like 1 + 1 =...
But they can work synergistically.
They work synergistically, mm-hmm. yes. So that they... And they may work in a slightly different way. We know that berberine has a multiple... pathways by which it works.
Mm-hmm.
It may even change the intestinal flora to make the metabolism better. It seems to kill harmful gut bacteria.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
I believe they can be used. There's no danger that your blood sugar is going to go too low.
Right.
You know, as opposed to certain diabetes medications that can actually cause your blood sugar to go too low, and
mm-hmm.
that's not good. Then you have to,
right.
you know, you might have a hypoglycemic episode. But that won't happen with these.
Yeah. If Charlie is taking metformin, we would probably advise that he takes some additional folate and B12.
Absolutely.
Because it may deplete that to some degree.
That's a good point. A lot of people miss that, is that you deplete your B12 when you take, especially
yeah.
B12, when you take metformin.
Mm-hmm. Charlie has an additional question. He's asking, I've got 25,000 IU of vitamin A, which I inadvertently bought. Is that safe to take?
Yeah, the way to take that is if you want to get, it's a little high,
25,000.
And 25,000 day in and day out might put a little stress on the liver. There's also some studies that suggest that at that dose it might increase the risk for osteoporosis.
Wow.
Yeah, it's
that's interesting.
Especially in women. Probably the threshold for vitamin A, and keep in mind this is not beta carotene, because some
right.
supplements say whatever, they might have 25,000, but only 10,000 comes from the vitamin A, the retinol, and
mm-hmm.
15,000 comes from
beta
carotene or mixed
yeah.
carotenoids. So the beta carotene doesn't seem to be harmful, usually not harmful to the liver. But so what you can do with vitamin A is you could take that a week.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you'll get 5,000 approximately every day that way, a little less than that.
Yeah.
And that might be an okay way to take it.
And if Charlie knows he has some kind of liver disease, he should probably just
right.
not do anything.
For someone who has liver disease, yeah. that might be particularly contraindicated.
Yeah.
Cirrhosis or mm-hmm. chronic hepatitis or fatty liver, that would not be a good thing to take.
Okay. Charlie, okay, take your CM Core.
Hey, we just saved you $15. Send your check, please, to the Hoffman Center.
We've got another question here from Dan. Hi, Dr. Hoffman. Heard a program of yours on TuneIn Radio. Can you tell me if you know of a remedy for pulmonary fibrosis?
Now, that's a cool dude, because we have our shows available via the website. You can subscribe, and you can subscribe on iTunes. I've never done this, but you can subscribe on Stitcher, and if you're really a cool dude, you can subscribe on TuneIn Radio.
Mm-hmm.
So people are utilizing a variety of channels to get it on their mobile devices. It's delivered there.
Mm-hmm.
Doesn't mean you have to listen, but they're all there for you to listen. It's a convenient way of listening. So thanks for pointing out that avenue for listening to podcasts. What was the question again?
The question is, can you tell me if you know of a remedy for pulmonary fibrosis?
Okay. This is actually near and dear to my heart, because my father had that condition and ultimately passed away from that condition.
Mm.
It's a terrible condition. It's sort of, it's a lung disease that's sort of the opposite of emphysema. In emphysema, the lungs become enlarged and they actually develop Swiss cheese holes in them.
And they get barrel chest.
And they actually get a much bigger lung capacity. But that's not good, because it's inefficient breathing. And this is the result of a long history of chronic lung infections or asthma or smoking. But in fibrosis, which can also be due to smoking or asbestos exposure or silicosis, which is exposure to,
wow.
If you work in a quarry or you work in construction and you breathe a lot of sharp
mm-hmm.
stone fragments that are microscopic, you get them in the lung and they cause inflammation. And you get a shrinkage of the lung. Your lung gets very stiff. It's fibrotic. And this is a condition which has generally been progressively fatal, and there's not much you can do about it. What is exciting is that in the New England Journal of Medicine, there's actually a couple of new drugs
mm-hmm.
that have been employed. They're anti-fibrotic drugs
wow.
that have been used to slow the progression of it. And they seem, in the initial tests, to be somewhat helpful. They're not a cure, but they seem to slow the progression of the disease. So I hope that those get developed and mainstreamed soon because of the good results of these tests. Now, from a natural standpoint, I think the best thing you can do for it is to take antioxidants, take N-acetylcysteine, to even use intravenous or inhaled glutathione, because glutathione acts to repair inflamed tissue, and that would be your best bet in pulmonary fibrosis. By the way, the condition that a lot of the first responders at 9/11 responders have succumbed to because they were breathing toxic material and it damaged their lungs.
Yeah. Best of luck, Dan. This was about his father.
Yeah.
Okay. We have a question from Gabe. Do you recommend any supplements for infertility? My wife is 35 and I'm 40. We've both been evaluated with no obvious abnormalities. We have maybe a little too much stress in our lives and the infertility isn't making it better. Any thoughts or suggestions? Appreciated.
Okay. This whole subspecialty within integrative medicine is how to augment fertility, because there's a lot of couples in this predicament where there doesn't appear to be anything organically wrong, but conditions are suboptimal. And so how do we bring that up? Well, you know, you could probably make some suggestions yourself.
Well, there's a fertility diet, and I remember one of the recommendations is to eat full-fat dairy.
Mm-hmm.
That might be something. Eating a very clean diet, reducing your stress, obviously. But it's possible that increasing omega-3s, we get so much omega-6 in the diet, to counteract that.
Omega-3 is certainly important for maintaining a healthy pregnancy. It has an anti-miscarrying effect.
Mm-hmm.
It helps to reduce the incidence of miscarriages, reduces autoimmunity, which is sometimes a factor in infertility. I
remember one time we had a patient with infertility.
Yeah.
She's gone to see every doctor.
Right.
But nobody did the test that you did to find out that she had autoimmunity against her own ovaries.
Right, anti-ovarian antibodies.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, and that was how she found out.
In one case, they were told that everything was fine, but the husband's sperm wasn't quite good, and we changed his diet. We detoxed him. We got him off alcohol. We've gotten beautiful photographs. And they named they gave a kid the middle name Ronald, I think, in honor of us.
That's nice.
So diet and supplements can sometimes help. For men who have poor sperm quality, coenzyme Q10 has been shown to be helpful. Zinc has been shown to be helpful.
Stop eating soy.
Carnitine can be helpful. Yes, soy may be an estrogenic influence.
Mm-hmm.
Low-dose naltrexone is interesting because it helps as an anti-autoimmune effect. It's often used in fertility protocols in Europe. And it's really important to check thyroid because thyroid really can get in the way of optimal pregnancy. And I think many endocrinologists
are... miscarriage, too.
Yeah, and many endocrinologists are too stingy about giving thyroid. I think that thyroid could be a useful thing in some cases. So...
Not to mention the wrong kind of thyroid, but that's a whole other podcast.
Well, yeah, I mean, we like
podcast.
To give natural thyroid, which is fine to give during pregnancy.
Mm-hmm.
It just requires a little more skill in adjusting the dose.
Okay. Oh, best of luck to Gabe and his wife.
Yeah, it's an increasing problem, and, you know, it doesn't hurt to try detoxification, clean natural diet.
Yeah.
You know, worst come to worst, it's good for you. And also, you know, I think that some people may be hampered in fertility by burden of environmental toxicity. So we try to clean up that.
Right. People don't realize that they're getting, their environment is also the food they put in their mouth. They may think that something is natural and good, but if it's got a lot of preservatives in it, you know, colorings, carrageenan, all kinds of things,
the
flavorings,
the soaps, the
additives,
cosmetics, all these things build up.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of information, especially about male infertility, that men's sperm quality is declining.
Mm.
Okay? You know, you can't get good quality sperm anymore. It's like...
Shoot.
Yeah, used to, you know, back in the 50s, that's when they had good sperm. But when I was born. But the quality of sperm is declining, and that's thought to be a reflection of our toxic environment, because sperm may be very susceptible to the harmful effects of chemicals, which are ubiquitous now in our drinking water, in our air, in our foods. And these, you know, while the sperm may appear normal on, you know, microscopic exam, it may lack the ability to cross the
to traverse
the barriers to get all the way up there to fertilize an egg.
Okay. We have another question from Elizabeth. Hi, Dr. Hoffman and Layla. My brother's vitamin D level is 25.7. How much vitamin D do I give him to bring him up to the normal range? And then once it's normal, do I decrease it again to a lower amount? And also, is vitamin K necessary to obtain the proper absorption of vitamin D?
Right.
Thanks, and I love your show.
Yeah, so vitamin K is, I think, a useful accompaniment to vitamin D, but it's not necessary. It's just that vitamin K participates in calcium metabolism.
Yes.
So it helps. So if there's a danger of too much calcium being introduced in the system by the vitamin D, the vitamin K might protect against arterial deposition of calcium,
yeah,
or direct the calcium to the bones, which is more appropriate. So it's important in that sense. People have attempted to come up with a mathematical formula. Doctors love formulas, you know, like how much vitamin D do you give for how long for a person who has a vitamin D of 25? And it depends on a lot of things. It depends on the age of the person, depends on the condition of the person, the sex
of the
person.
Their medications.
Their genetics. It appears, I mean, some people, it's very hard to get the vitamin D up. You have to go, you know, we go progressively up where you say, well, okay, try 5,000. Up, it's still not moving. Try 5,000 alternating with 10,000 every other day. For my approach to someone with a vitamin D of 25 would be to start them on 5,000 and repeat the test in 3 to 6 months.
Mm-hmm.
And chances are very unlikely that they're going to go toxic with that. More
right.
likely that we might, in some, the minority of cases, see that it doesn't go up to where we want it to go, which is 40, 50 or more.
Yeah.
And then we might have to adjust it upward.
Mm-hmm.
But there's a complexity to vitamin D metabolism, and what I'm seeing is that the sicker the patient is, the more vitamin D they may need in certain instances, because vitamin D gets consumed or it gets
sequestered.
Yeah.
And
in fat people, there's certainly
it's sequestered by the fat cells.
Yep.
And certain medications will also interfere with vitamin D metabolism.
What are some of those? Do you know offhand?
The steroids,
anti-seizure medications.
Anti-seizure medications, that's another one.
Yeah.
So there's that. There's also...
things like Depakote will do that. Yeah.
Right. And the receptor... There is a genetic polymorphism.
Which we're now testing for is that some people have receptor problems, which might actually give you the false impression that there's adequate floating around in the blood, but it's not doing the job.
Right.
So that's another thing. And then there's also a racial thing, and this is just introduced, is that, and this was used as a defense of low vitamin D's, because it is said that, you know, African Americans have lower vitamin D's than Caucasians. This is true. This is population wise, that's true. And it was thought the reason for that is they have dark skins and they don't care about tanning.
Mm.
So they don't get, you know, they don't, if you already have dark skin, what's the point of tanning?
Mm-hmm.
And if you have a dark skin, it will also protect against the UV rays triggering cancer, but also triggering vitamin D production in your skin.
Right. So it takes them six times as long in the sun.
But they actually found there's a difference in the carrier for vitamin D in the African American population. Now these days, you know, you can say, well, a person's African American. Well, what does that mean? They could be like racially 1/16th African, or, you know, they're considered African American. So they think this is like a lot of heterogeneity about that. You know, versus someone who is a cab driver from the country of Senegal,
Trinidad.
You know, Senegal or something like that. We're very racially pure. But anyway, they found that their contention is that African Americans, we could even say, you know, I guess we can go to that term, blacks. Or the old term, the non-PC2, Negroes, people of that race, have may have adequate vitamin Ds mm-hmm. at levels that appear lower, according to this new theory. And then the question is, should we supplement them? Does that mean they need more vitamin D? Or should we have a different standard for vitamin D for African Americans versus Caucasians? And that's, you know, that's part of the controversy about vitamin D now.
Wow. I read just an interesting headline this morning that certain bacteria may actually invade the receptors, the vitamin D receptors, thereby not allowing vitamin D to do its job. I have to read more about that, so stay tuned. But it was very, very interesting. We had a lot of patients today, so I didn't get to it, but I will tomorrow morning. Thank you for your question, Elizabeth.
So this is a good point in which to pause, because we divide these podcasts into two parts, hopefully bite-sized and easy listening for your listening pleasure. We will resume with questions in part two of today's Q&A with Layla, and we'll start with, what's the question that we're going to tackle in part two?
Do you recommend prenatal vitamins?
Okay. So coming up, part two of today's Q&A with Layla, I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and this is the Intelligent Medicine Podcast.